Welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. We look forward to learning some Torah with you today. Thank you for tuning in. Today we are joined by Rabbi Meir Schweiger, who is the Mashkiach Ruchani, spiritual guide at Pardes. Today he will be teaching us about Parshat Vayeshev. I'm Rachel Isaacs, a student from Manalapan, New Jersey, and the engineer for this program. Hopefully you've been enjoying our podcast series with the Pardes faculty. But if you want more than a virtual experience, think about coming to Pardes for one of our programs, for a year, for a summer, or for some winter learning. I decided to come to Pardes after graduating from Wellesley College to deepen my understanding of Jewish text. I truly relish studying in Jerusalem, the capital of the Jewish state. Each morning, the Pardes community comes together to learn more about Torah, Mishnah, Talmud, and various other primary Jewish texts. Pardes is a unique and wonderful place with a warm and diverse community, being at once committed to standards of halacha while being open and respectful to students of all backgrounds. For more information, visit our website at www.pardes.co.il. Your participation and feedback is vital for the success of the podcast series. Please send us comments on the episode, where you live, and how you heard about us. Send your email to podcast@pardesusa.org. Thank you. That's it, and now Rabbi Schweiger.
Thank you, Rachel. In the last few parshiot, we've been discussing the personality of Yaakov. From this week's parsha, Parshat Vayeshev, until the end of the book of Bereshit, the focus of attention is no longer on Yaakov, but on the sons of Yaakov, and in particular on Joseph. So I would like to spend today's discussion to talk about the personality of Joseph and his development. Perhaps we'll start with the second sentence in the parsha. It says, Eile todot Yaakov, Yosef ben Shvasre Shana, haya ro'et echav batzon, v'hu na'ar et b'nei vilha v'et b'nei zilpa n'she aviv, v'yave Yosef et dibatam ra'a lavihem. These are the generations of Yaakov, Joseph. The fact that the Torah tells me the generations of Yaakov are Yosef is perhaps highlighting the parallel between Yaakov and Yosef. There are many parallels in their lives. Both of them are younger sons. Both of them are younger sons who end up, in a way, usurping the role of the older sons. Both of them are hated by their brothers to the point where the brothers want to kill them. And as we'll discuss in the course of this session, both of them are also people who have dreams. There's a basic difference between the dreams of Jacob and the dreams of Joseph, which highlight a basic difference in their lives. And that is, in Jacob's dreams, God appears to him. God speaks to him. In Joseph's dreams, God does not appear. God does not speak. And perhaps this is what marks the dividing line between the patriarchs and the children who follow. Each of the patriarchs has a direct contact with God. God speaks to them. God challenges them. God makes a covenant with them. The children of the patriarchs never have that direct contact with God. God never speaks to them. Yet nevertheless, they have a relationship with God. One could say that relationship with God is something which is transmitted by their parents. It's this experience which is somehow conveyed vicariously to the children. But as I would like to point out in this session, the challenge of the children of Jacob is to somehow discover God in reality, in their reality. And in that way, the children of Yaakov are very much similar to our reality. To the best of my knowledge, I don't know people who have God communicating to them. And if there were to be anybody who would claim that, we'd probably want them hospitalized. Yet nevertheless, I do know many people who somehow feel the presence of God in their lives. And it's that experience of God that shapes the course of their lives. And this is what I would like to see in terms of Joseph. In the verse that I just read, we're told that Joseph is 17 years old, and he's a lad. And this is the first picture we get of Joseph. He's a na'ar, a lad. A lad means someone who is in a process of formation. Perhaps we could say who's immature. And in fact, when we look at his behavior in the sentence, there may be an element of immaturity. It tells us that Joseph is shepherding with his brothers the sheep. But in fact, when you look at the Hebrew, it says, Yosef roeh etechav batzon, which literally taken means he shepherds his brothers in the sheep, which gives you a very different picture of what's going on. In one case, Yosef is tagging along with his brothers, and in the other case, he's actually leading his brothers. What is Yosef really doing? And then it talks about him being a na'ar at B'nai Vilha. Na'ar should be an adjective. He's a lad. And if that's the case, it says he's a lad with the children of Bilha and Zilpah. But what does that mean? There's one interpretation that says that he's acting immaturely in the same way that the children of Bilha and Zilpah are acting. That somehow he's following their lead. But another way of looking at it is that he may be acting immaturely in terms of trying to somehow become the leader of the sons of Zilha, Bilha and Zilpah in defending their roles as being equal children of Yaakov. And that's why it speaks about them being the wives of his father. So that perhaps there's already the sense of a certain power struggle which is going on in the family between Yosef and the sons of Leah. One of the things which is striking in the whole story of Yosef is a tremendous ambiguity. As I tried to point out, the verses can be interpreted perhaps in opposite ways. And maybe this ambiguity reflects the ambiguity in the life of Yosef. I spoke earlier about the parallel between Yosef and Yaakov. And last week we spoke about the identity crisis which Yaakov has. Who is he? Is he Yaakov? Is he Yisrael? Yaakov and Yisrael are two radically different personalities. And we will see that Yosef is constantly struggling as well. And although there is not an issue of what is his name never changes, he's always Yosef, but there definitely is a question of who is he really? What is motivating him? There's a certain element of mystery, of a lack of clarity as to what exactly is he doing it, is he doing, and why is he doing it? And maybe I'll say at this point, certainly in the beginning, it could be that that ambiguity maybe also reflects a certain confusion that Yosef experiences as a lad, as part of the process of growing up. in his adolescence. In Pasuk Gimel, chapter 37, Lamed Zayin Gimel, it says, "And Israel loved Yosef from among his sons because he is the son of his old age, and he gives him a special coat." It's important to recognize that the coat which Yosef is being given is not just a present, and it is not just some coat which is functional, but that the coat reflects a status that he is being given in the family. One could say the status of leadership. In the same way, Jacob puts on the clothing of Esav and thereby merits getting the special blessing. In this case, the same Yaakov gives Joseph the coat, and with that coat perhaps goes the blessing of leadership. And why Yosef? Well, it says because he is the son of his old age. One way of looking at it is because he is the son of Rachel. Of Rachel, who bears him after years of being a barren woman. The son that Yaakov so dearly yearned for. So that it's natural that if this is the son that he holds to be so precious because of the tremendous love that Yaakov had for Rachel, that this is the one that he wants to carry on his line. But it's interesting that the Aramaic translation, Targum Onkelos, says that Ben Zkunim means a wise son or the son of his wisdom. And that Yaakov favors Yosef because he sees in Yosef the qualities of wisdom that can continue the legacy of the patriarchs. So that he is the most appropriate one to carry that on. One could even say that if we combine the two, it may very well be because of the closeness of their relationship that enables Yosef to somehow absorb everything that Yaakov has to give, whether it be in terms of his wisdom or in terms of his life experience. And how does Yosef deal with this idea of having a coat and having been given that position of leadership? Well, we're told that he has dreams. Two dreams. Two dreams that somehow highlight how Yosef will now become a leader, a ruler. In one dream, the sheaves of the brothers bow down to his sheaf, which would seem to say that they are subordinated to him in terms of their possessions, perhaps dependent upon him in terms of their possessions. But in the second dream, it is no longer just the brothers, but it is the sun and the moon and 11 stars, which the rabbis see as being a hint to his father and his mother and his brothers who are bowing down to him. It is no longer the possessions of one subordinated to the possessions of the other. It is the person that is now subordinated. But the second dream seems to go even further. The imagery of the sun and the moon and the stars of the cosmos bowing down to Joseph. But who is this Joseph who they're bowing down to? It takes on a godlike quality. So that after being given that role of leadership, Joseph has the dreams, the vision of what it is to be a leader. But that vision, perhaps, is something which magnifies his role, but magnifies it in a very negative way. Joseph tells the brother the dream, the brothers the dreams, and it creates a tremendous enmity, resentment, jealousy. And the question is raised, why do it? What do you hope to accomplish? Perhaps this reflects the immaturity of Yosef. That yes, he has qualities of leadership and it's recognized by his father. But it's not enough to just lord it over the people that you're supposed to be leading. You need to be able to get their recognition. You need to get their consent, their support. In that way, he miserably fails. As I mentioned earlier, there's no mention of God in these dreams. Is this prophetic? Well, we know from what happens later on that it is prophetic. Because in fact, later on in the story, in next week's portion, Parshat Miketz, the brothers come down to Egypt. They in fact do bow down to Joseph in his capacity as the second in command. They in fact are dependent upon him. And eventually, when Joseph reveals himself 2 weeks from now, he invites the brothers to come join him in Egypt, and they become totally dependent on his material provisions. So this is prophetic, but God is not mentioned. And it could be that maybe it's not necessarily the voice of God who's speaking here, but Yosef's subconscious. One might even argue his delusions of grandeur. And it's hard to avoid the feeling that when he tells the brothers about the dream and they hate him, certainly the first time, that doesn't stop him from telling them a second time about dreams. That somehow there's this need, this obsession, to be able to highlight, I am the leader, I am the one in charge. This beginning sets in motion a process. In the life of Yosef, a process of what we might call ups and downs, or transformation. That somehow Yosef has to develop as a personality from being a na'ar, an adolescent, to being an ish, a man, and not only a man, but a man of stature. From being somebody who has the qualities of leadership to being somebody who learns what it means to be a responsible leader. And sometimes Yosef has to learn the hard way. Perhaps the first positive step in that direction is when the brothers, in an extreme move, decide to just pick up and leave and go to the city of Shechem, as if they have no place in the house of Yaakov. And then Yaakov calls Yosef and tells him, I want you to go on a mission to your brothers. And Yosef's response is, Hineni, here I am. We know from other places, especially in the story of the Akedah with Avraham, that Hineni is an expression of, I am here to do whatever you want. It's an expression of profound humility. Humility and diligence. The Yosef, who has just been told that he's a ruler, who has the sense of mastery, has to learn how to balance it with a sense of humility. And he does when he says, Hineni. But it doesn't stop at Hineni. Yaakov says to him, or as the verse says, and Yisrael says to him, and this is sentence 14, please go and seek out the welfare of your brothers and the welfare of the sheep. The mission is not just, oh, I'd like to see how they're doing. The mission is you have to bring about a reconciliation with your brothers. You push them out of the house by your dreams and by the telling of the dreams. You created a split, which is going to tear apart the family. You, Yosef, have to now go and find a way to bring the family back together, to bring about a reconciliation. And Yosef goes. And not only does he go, but when he comes to the place, when he comes to Shechem, he can't find his brothers. And all of a sudden, there's a man who appears and asks him, "What are you looking for?" And he says, "I'm seeking my brothers." And when he's told they're not here, but they're in the place called Dothan, Yosef goes to Dothan to find them, which means that he is not just paying lip service to his father, but when he said Hineni, he really meant it. He really wants to be able to now do what his father asks. And not only because it's the will of his father, because of the sense of subordination to his father, but out of a sense of duty that he has to somehow bring the family back together. Because of that calling, "I am seeking my brothers." And just when it seems that Joseph is on the right track and he's about to now somehow correct the mistakes that he made, when he encounters his brothers, all of a sudden everything bottoms out. The brothers don't even give him the opportunity to speak. And although we see from a later verse that he did speak and that he did plead with them, but here there's absolute silence. And in rapid succession, the brothers strip him of his coat, throw him into a pit, and eventually sell him into slavery. So that just at that moment, when there was the opportunity to now mend the fences, bring things back to the way they needed to be, things bottom out. And this presents a tremendous challenge to Joseph. How will he deal with this new life? How will he actually deal with the fact that he is now a slave? What does that say about his relationship with his family? And we're told in chapter 39, Yosef is bought by Potiphar. Potiphar is not just anyone. He is an officer in Pharaoh's court. He's an Ish Mitzri, a significant personality. And lo and behold, in the house of Potiphar, the slave becomes a master. Joseph rises in that household. He's put in charge of everything. Very similar to the story a few weeks ago about Eliezer, or the servant of Abraham, who on the one hand is a servant, and yet on the other hand is the one who rules over everything in Abraham's household. So that the servant Yosef once again becomes a ruler. He's entrusted with everything in Potiphar's house except for one thing. It says in the verse, except for the lechem, except for the bread that Potiphar eats. And then the question is, can Joseph be faithful to that trust that Potiphar places in him? Can Joseph appreciate what we would call responsible leadership? After the Torah describes how Joseph is so successful, it says, and Joseph was very, very good looking. And there exists a midrash which says, it's not only that he's good looking, but that he went out of his way to make himself good looking. Perhaps he became very, very caught up with the life that he has. And this is the challenge which Joseph now faces in this new environment. I spoke earlier about the struggles that he has. Well, now the struggle is, now that I'm in Egypt, and I'm very successful in Egypt, do I become an Egyptian? Do I assimilate in that framework? Do I now become very caught up with myself, self-absorbed? And in fact, in that society, right, it may very well be that self-absorption is a norm, where people are very caught up with their titles, caught up with their looks, caught up with their power. Or do I still maintain my identity as a Jew, as being part of the household of Yaakov? There's a very interesting rabbinic comment that when Yosef is in Potiphar's house, it says that God is with him. And not only is God with him, but he's very successful. And not only that, but that his master sees that God is with him. And the question is raised, but how would his master know that Hashem, which is a unique expression for the God of the Jews, is with him? And there's a rabbinic comment that says, because the name of God was on his lips. This is a rabbinic comment. It's not explicit in the text. But it's very, very telling. Because what the rabbis are saying is that for the first time, when Joseph is in Egypt, all of a sudden, the consciousness of God comes to the surface. We don't hear about God when he's with his father. All of a sudden, it appears now. And perhaps when Joseph bottoms out and he's sold into slavery, all of a sudden that consciousness of being a Jew comes to the forefront, to the point where he goes out of his way to emphasize his identity and even bring Potiphar to the recognition of that. But as I said a minute ago, he's torn. On the one hand, yes, the name of God is on his lips, but on the other hand, he's pretty. He likes it in Egypt. He's made it in Egypt. And this struggle reaches a climax in the story of Mrs. Potiphar. Mrs. Potiphar is very much taken in by Joseph. She propositions him to lie with her, to sleep with her. And we're told that Joseph refuses. Although for people who are familiar with the Torah cantillation, it's interesting how he refuses. I'll just say it. Vayimaen. It's a type of refusal that's vacillating. That's not abrupt. That's not clear-cut. And we find that Mrs. Potiphar doesn't just ask him once. It says day in, day out, she's asking him. And initially she says, sleep with me. And then she says, be with me. And she's trying to somehow break that impenetrable barrier. And then there comes the moment of truth. Before I get to the moment of truth, when she approaches Joseph and says, sleep with me, his response is, but I can't do it. For two reasons. One, it's a betrayal of my master because he has entrusted me with everything and not held back anything except for you, his wife. And perhaps in that statement, we see that Yosef has learned something in terms of what leadership means. Leadership is not being empowered, which then gives you the license to do whatever you want. But leadership implies also the restrictions, the element of trust that you have to show to the people that you're responsible to. And Joseph adds, and besides my need to be faithful to my master, were I to do this, I would sin to God, which shows that Joseph still has that sense, right, of his Jewish identity. It is not just a question of relations between people, but it's a question of a relationship to God. And in fact, when the moment of truth comes, Mrs. Potiphar grabs his coat, and Joseph is on the verge of actually sleeping with her. But he doesn't, and instead he runs away in that critical moment. In fact, his running away is not running away from his test. It's actually confronting his test. It's not avoiding the confrontation, but it's resolving the confrontation. There's a very interesting rabbinic comment that says, at that moment of truth, all of a sudden Joseph saw the image of his father. And he immediately said, I can't do this. And what does that mean? Jacob is the one who is the role model for Yosef. He is the one who on some level mediates his relationship to God. When he sees his father, it raises for him the issue, who am I? And in that moment of truth, he decides, I am part of the family. I am a Jew. I have a relationship with God. I can't do this. Were he to have slept with Mrs. Potiphar, that would have cut him off from his father, cut him off from the Jewish people. And Joseph does not cross that line. Joseph is subsequently thrown into jail because Mrs. Potiphar presents the story in a distorted way to somehow implicate him. But in jail, Joseph once again begins this comeback. And he's put in charge of all the prisoners. And in fact, when one looks at the story, it's very similar to the story of what it's like in the house of Potiphar. Once again, he seems to be somebody who is in a position of slavery, and yet at the same time is put in a position of leadership. And once again, Joseph is entrusted with everyone there. And then we have the story of the butler and the baker, who have dreams, and this creates a certain closure with the beginning of the parsha, just as Joseph had dreams. Joseph had two dreams, and they have each one a dream, which make two dreams. The difference, though, is that when Joseph sees them disturbed, in fact, more than disturbed, distraught, extremely distraught, he says to them, what's the problem? Does not God have the solution to dreams? So that this is the first time where Joseph is associating God with dreams. But it's a God who can solve dreams. And when they tell them their dreams, Joseph solves their dreams, and lo and behold, it comes true. So that one once again could see that perhaps these dreams were really a prophecy. And somehow Joseph seems to have the inside track to be able to solve the dreams. It seems that in this whole story, Joseph carries himself very well and tries to be very, very responsible, except at the very end. At the very end, after he tells the butler that he will be reinstated in his position, Joseph then seems to plead with him, when you get out, put in a good word to Pharaoh. One could even say he's groveling. He presents himself in such a pejorative way. Here I am, this unfortunate individual who was stolen from the land of the Hebrews. And here I didn't do anything, to the point where they threw me into this pit. The rabbis are not happy about those last lines. And the rabbis say that, in fact, Joseph had to spend another 2 years in that jail so that he would learn what it is to be a man of stature. That you don't just become an opportunist. And this is actually reflected in next week's parsha. So I'll keep you in suspense. And we will stop for today. But I just want to end by saying, in the course of our parsha, there are three stories where Joseph has his ups and downs, where he is able to rise to a position of leadership, but it seems very easily loses that. And each time he has to learn how to somehow regain it, but regain it in a more responsible way. He has to learn not to be self-absorbed. He has to learn not to antagonize people. He has to learn that when he's entrusted with something, he has to be faithful to the people that he's entrusted with. And perhaps he also has to learn the role of God in his life. To be able to have the name of God on his lips, so that he's able to bring that name to the people around him. To be able to not just say that when something goes well in his life, oh, thank God, Baruch Hashem. But to be able to also say to the butler and the baker, you had a dream. Dreams are not just your subconscious. Dreams are not just something that you go to wise people to solve, but God has the solution. And somehow I will be able to, because of my connection, tell you the meaning of that dream. But he also has to learn how to carry himself in a responsible way in his actions, not only in his speech. He has to, when the moment of truth comes with Mrs. Potiphar, to not just talk the talk and say, but how can I do this? But in that moment of truth, walk away. He has to also know that when he speaks to people, it's not just that he doesn't speak in a way which is overbearing, but he also should not speak in a way which is demeaning, which is groveling. To be continued next week. Shabbat Shalom.